you want to learn how to make better pizza at home? Have you ever wondered if Chicago pizza is actually pizza? On today's podcast, I have pizza maker and founder of Women's Pizza Month, Christy Aaliyah. This is Chris Spear, and you're listening to Chefs Without Restaurants, the show where I speak with culinary entrepreneurs and people working in the food and beverage industry outside of a traditional restaurant setting. I have 31 years of working in kitchens, but not restaurants, and operate a personal chef service throwing dinner parties in the Washington, D.C. area. March is halfway over, but there's still plenty of time to celebrate Women's Pizza Month, an online party taking place all month long on Instagram. Of course, you can follow along by checking out the hashtag Women's Pizza Month. Traditionally, a lot of men have received publicity and notoriety for their pizzas, but that doesn't mean women haven't been making pizzas all along. Christy wanted to shine a spotlight on many of those women, so she took to Instagram a couple years ago to start Women's Pizza Month. Anyone can participate, and she actually encourages you to go and do a post and dedicate it to a woman that you'd like to highlight. In addition, she's partnered with Corto and Stanislaus on their For the Love of Pizza kit. Christy will also tell you about the 5 scholarships that are available for aspiring home pizza makers to go to Pizza University, right here in Maryland. But of course, I also want this to be a beneficial episode for you. So we get into things like fermentation time, tools for making pizza at home, and quality ingredients. We talk about different styles of pizza and pizza toppings. We also talk about how long can you keep pizza dough once you've made it? Does it need to go in the freezer, or can you let it hang out in the fridge for a couple of weeks? And if you want to dig in more, I've done episodes with Andris, the founder of Baking Steel, as well as the master miller at Corto Olive Oil. I'll link those up in the show notes. And if you're really into pizza, go check out the What's Good Dough podcast. Idrift's my guy, and he talks about pizza every week on his show. Go check it out. Stick around, because the show will be coming up right after a word from my new sponsor that I'm really excited about, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon.
As a lifelong bourbon enthusiast, I've always been captivated by its rich complexity and fascinated by its history. Bourbon was the first spirit I'd tried when I was old enough to drink. I only wish I'd started with the good stuff. That's why I'm excited to introduce you to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond. Born from the Shapira family's unwavering passion since 1935, this bourbon's a testament to quality and tradition. Heaven Hill Distillery goes beyond the Bottled in Bond Act of 1897, aging this bourbon for 7 years, 3 more than required, creating a richer, more sophisticated flavor profile. When you select this premium Bottled in Bond bourbon, you're also ensured that you're getting a bourbon that's been made in a single distillation season and that it's been bottled at exactly 100 proof. This commitment to excellence is evident in every sip. But don't just take my word for it. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond won the double gold at the 2023 World Spirits Competition in San Francisco, New York, and Singapore, as well as the 2023 Triple Still Award from the Tasting Alliance. Discover the award-winning Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond for yourself. Whether you enjoy it neat, on the rocks, or as the cornerstone of a cocktail, it's a bourbon that stands apart. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond delivers a flavor profile that's unmatched. Available nationally at your local retailer. Embrace the premium quality that Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond brings to every sip. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hey, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Chris, for having me on the show.
Let's start with pizza. What is it about pizza that you love? How did you get into the world of pizza?
My name is Christy, and I have a confession. I'm a pizza addict. But pizza is actually the world's, I think, most favorite food. I think I remember reading a study that like half of Americans, when they were polled on their favorite food, said that pizza was their favorite food. And what I love about pizza is there is a pizza for everyone, literally for everyone. I mean, whether you're a vegetarian, a vegan, a meat lover, a veggie lover, gluten-free, I mean, you name it, there's a pizza for you. And I just love that about pizza. You know, I go through different phases in my life, which pizzas are my favorite, but there's never been a point in my life where I didn't love pizza.
When do you remember seeing the evolution, though? I mean, if you did, because I think growing up in my 40s, you know, there was where I grew up like 1 or 2 styles of pizza. Nobody was doing crazy toppings. You know, it was traditional. It was, you had pepperoni, you had cheese, you had maybe mushroom. There weren't all these pickled vegetables on there, or, you know, Calabrian chilies. Do you recall seeing the shift of when that started to take place?
Well, I mean, I'm lucky being from New York. I was born and raised in New York City. So I've been privileged enough to see probably things that you, maybe if you were in a different part of the country, you wouldn't have seen, like the grandma pizza, you know, was a style that I grew up with, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you could get grandma pizza, whereas you don't see grandma style pizza. If people aren't familiar with what that is, it's a thin pan pizza, similar to Sicilian, but much thinner. Usually it doesn't have a par bake the way Sicilian does. And that was a style, like I said, it would be new to many people now. As far as new ingredients, I'd have to say I saw that more in the 90s in New York. I think that probably was maybe in the 2000s, you know, for the rest of the country. But they started putting, you know, chicken, pasta on pizza. I mean, that's probably where it really started.
New York is the epicenter of pizza. Yeah, grandma pies, I still don't see them around. The last time I had one was at Scar's in like 3 years ago or something. I'm in Maryland now. It's not something we have abundantly in this area. Didn't grow up with it. And I've only had it, you know, a handful of times even still.
So good. It's one of my favorite styles. So yeah, I hope that trend picks up.
But you had family. Wasn't your grandfather in pizza?
Yes, I learned how to make pizza from my grandfather. Actually, I remember being a little girl that could barely like see above the countertop and like standing on a stool and, you know, kneading the pizza or stretching it out. I mean, when I was really little, he didn't let me like put it in the oven or anything, but I was just, I love pizza since I was a little girl. So it's been a part of my life forever.
Was that recreational for him or was this a business? Did he have a pizzeria?
It was actually recreational. He had friends who were in the pizza business. Like the Italian community in the Bronx was very tight. So the butcher, the pastry chef, the pizza maker, you know, they all were close friends. So I guess you could say it was professional and amateur for him.
Well, you know, pizza at home has gotten so easy comparatively. I mean, I can't imagine back then, you know, now you have things like obviously an uni oven or a baking steel, you know. Pizza at home. I remember trying to make it years ago with my, you know, just a stone that was okay. You know, there weren't as many resources and you'd do an okay job, but at the end of the day, I'd much rather just go to a pizzeria and buy it than make it at home. But now you can make amazing pizza in your house.
I like to say that people can make much better pizza in their house. I call the baking steel, the pizza steel, the gateway drug, I guess you'd say, into pizza craziness at home. I mean, that's where my pizza elevated on the more basic level other than pan pizza. A baking steel, if you're not, or a pizza steel, if people aren't familiar, is like a heavy, heavy steel that you put in your oven. It's actually so heavy, you'll probably leave it in your oven.
Very heavy.
It's really heavy and it retains heat like no other. And it's perfect. Like if you like Neapolitan style pizza, you could actually achieve that in your home oven. And that really wasn't really possible on the stones. And then of course you have the pizza ovens now, which I happen to be an Uni pizza oven ambassador. And that's just even more exciting.
I had Andres from Baking Steel on the show a couple years ago. So if anyone's listening and they want to learn more about that and another dive into pizza making at home and bread and stuff, I'll link that in the show notes. And it's great for things other than pizza. I mean, just temperature regulation. Like if I'm doing a pie or something, putting it on the steel. So, you know, keeping it in the oven. But seeing these pizza ovens, and they're not that expensive. I mean, you know, it's a decent investment. But if you're a pizza maker, getting something like, you know, a small Uni just to have at your home is a game changer. I don't have one yet, but I have a lot of friends who do, and I'm envious. And it's like at the kind of the top of my when I get my next piece of cooking equipment.
At one point, not that long ago, to get a pizza oven in your backyard, either if you didn't want to spend thousands, you either had to build it yourself, or actually, that was your only option. And then you had these pizza ovens coming into the market, which allowed you for a few $100s to have an oven that reaches temperatures of 800, 900 degrees. That's unheard of.
There's also ingredients, I think, you know, the caliber of ingredients you can get that maybe weren't available to home cooks either. You're seeing better quality flours, better cheeses, better tomatoes, better olive oil. So I love seeing this. It's an amazing time to be in the food industry in general. But with the pizza now, again, I think, especially if you're not in a place that has a great culture of pizza? Because there are some pizza deserts. I don't know. Is that a term anyone's used? Is like pizza deserts, like a city that doesn't have pizzerias, you know?
Well, I mean, for a snobby New Yorker, the whole entire country used to be a pizza desert. Once I left New York, I'd be like, I'm not eating pizza or bagels if you want to go for the outside in Europe. But now there's amazing pizza everywhere. So I actually literally can't say there's a pizza desert. Actually, speaking of deserts, not that Egypt's completely a desert, but there's an amazing top pizza woman who won best pizza, you know, maker in the world, top pizzeria in the world. She's in Egypt. I mean, so literally in the desert.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yes. She has an Instagram page. It's called What's the Crust? That's the name of her pizzeria. She's got an awesome story, and she puts her own Egyptian spin on pizza. It's actually pretty incredible. I'm going to be doing a dedication for her.
And interpretations through other countries. I mean, are there countries that have a strong culture of pizza that's like non-traditional, or places where they're using like their indigenous ingredients? Like, have you seen places, I'm sure, that are doing really interesting things like that?
I mean, I guess maybe they wouldn't technically call it, you know, pizza possibly. But I mean, as far as like Brazil actually has one of the biggest Italian populations outside of Italy, and they take pizza very, very seriously. And if you look at some of those pizzas, I mean, they put some crazy things on there and they're proud of it. So I think culturally, like depending on the country, some countries will tend to put a lot more cheese or toppings. If you go to like classic, like Neapolitan pizza in Naples, I mean, it's only more recent that you have contemporary pizza where they're getting a little crazier over there. But it used to be like you have associations like the AVPN that defined what is a pizza. And I mean, it is still very, very minimal. I mean, they laxed the rules slightly, like now sourdough would be acceptable. That's the only reason we can get along now, because I happen to love making sourdough pizza, but I'm not a person that likes to follow rules. So,
do you only do naturally leavened doughs, or do you ever sometimes just want a quick pizza and you grab a packet of yeast and make a dough?
Okay, well, let me back you up. Do I ever not do naturally leavened pizza? Yes. Do I ever make a pizza in less than 3 hours? No. I'm like a slow fermentation. For me, dough is so important. And I like to tell people that time and temperature is an ingredient. And for the best pizza, I'm a believer in, you know, it needs time. Can you make, if you're going to do a really, really quick pizza, I'm going to tell you, you know, the most acceptable way for me would be a super thin, thin crust pizza, like when you roll out paper thin. And then I guess at that point, you know, the toppings would be more important. And you're just talking about a thin, crispy base. But usually my pizza dough is long fermented.
I don't plan far enough in advance. You know, it'll be like a Thursday and I want pizza. I'm like, I should have started 72 hours ago with my dough if I was going to do this. I guess I should just have dough all the time going and just make pizza.
Yes.
That's the trick, right? Just constantly have dough going.
Always have pizza in your fridge. Actually, it's funny is, I mean, not only do I do naturally leavened, I actually originally learned how to make pizza with yeast. My grandfather didn't use sourdough. And poulish actually is a flavorful way of using yeast. And actually, I like to compare sourdough to a always ready to go poulish that I have. What a poulish is, it's 50% water, 50% flour, and it's basically fermented with commercial yeast, usually, whether that's fresh yeast or, you know, active dry yeast or instant yeast. And basically for that, if you always have pizza dough in your fridge, like you can make it your mission to basically make pizza dough every single Wednesday, or more than that, do it twice a week, but you can leave that dough in there for a week. You could get, if your temperature fridge is, temperature of your fridge is low enough, you could probably go up. I've pushed 2 weeks.
You can also freeze dough. I know friends who, you know, make batches of dough and just keep it in the freezer. So it's one of those things, you know, if you have a slow, whatever, Tuesday, just make some dough, roll it out, you know, in your balls and throw it in the freezer. And then you just have to pull it out and get ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I say if you're going to make pizza within 10 days, you probably don't need to put it in the fridge. Actually, I think it's As someone who likes funky flavors and flavorful breads, you know, I say push the limits of fermentation. You know, if my dough is over fermented, like you put in a pan, forget even rolling it out. I mean, rolling it out is one technique you could save old pizza dough with. I've known people who actually took 3 week old pizza dough, you know, and rolled it out, but you throw it in a pan. You don't even have to worry about stretching it out. Pizza dough shouldn't go to waste unless it looks really funky. If it's starting to turn black and smelling a little bit like nail polish, you could say goodbye to it. But anything before that, I think you'll surprise yourself.
Well, I tend to lean personally to the pan, not because it's my favorite style, but just because I have trouble. I have trouble rolling it. I have trouble stretching it. It tears. If I do get a good pizza, I have trouble pitching it off the, you know, the peel. I'm a work in progress. I have a lot of friends in the pizza industry. They're always giving me tips, but I'm still like, man, I just want to have a pizza like you guys have at your shop where it's a nice looking pizza and it's not, I go to pitch it and it gets stuck and then it slides and is a big old mess. So I do a lot of pan pizza.
You know what? I mean, I love people like you. Like my favorite thing now is actually doing pizza and bread classes. And my favorite people to teach are beginners because it's amazing how quickly you can learn. Like, I really don't think that pizza is complicated. I think people overcomplicate it. I think they just need certain tools and, more importantly, confidence to make amazing pizza. Like when you're talking about the launch, it's actually just sometimes some quick tips where I could see what you're doing and I could just get you, you know, to where you need to go with just, you know, maybe a change of ingredients, a change of hydration, water level. Because people like to take recipes like from the internet and they don't realize that not all flour is the same. When you're talking about adding water to flour, whether it's bread or pizza dough, some flours are going to absorb water better. And even that same type of flour, that same brand of flour, if it's old, it's not going to absorb water the same way. So it's things for people to keep in mind.
I had a friend on the podcast who has a sourdough bread business, and I asked him about recipes. And he said, you know, I don't like to get overly complicated with recipes. He said, the problem I see is people change recipes too often. Like they make a recipe, it doesn't work, and then they go to another recipe, whereas that might be a good recipe. Start taking notes. So like you said, you know, go back and make it again with the same recipe, but maybe tweak the hydration or tweak the proof time or something. But everyone's changing too many variables. So they make this, you know, bread or pizza dough. It doesn't come out. Next time they're going to change the flour type and the hydration and the temperature of the oven. And it's like, you need to kind of ratchet it down like one component at a time. That's what he was saying to me about bread making.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that when it comes to pizza. I mean, yes, it's fun to keep playing and changing things around. But ideally, if you want to learn and get better, or if you are making mistakes, the best way to figure them out is to stay on that same recipe and figure out what exactly went wrong. And that's what I love about the pizza community. Actually, it's all about collaborating. People share all, I guess you would say, their secrets. Like if you have a pizza problem, people get so excited about helping you out. Like they want to figure out your problem. It's fun. Like I love doing that.
This podcast was actually, I started with a co-host and he has a wood-fired mobile pizza business. So Andrew's not with me anymore, but when we started this podcast was a duo. And for 4 months I had as my co-host, a guy who had a pizza business and he still has a pizza business. He just doesn't podcast with me anymore. So having the benefit of Andrew, you know, on call almost all the time, I've, you know, been in his kitchen and picked up some tips from him. So it was good to have someone very close to me who could kind of show me the ropes a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the important thing too is, I mean, everybody has access to some type of flour, but I think the important thing is the quality and the freshness of your ingredients. Like if you can't get a flour that you see someone using, like might seem absolutely amazing, but if you can't get that fresh, forget about it. If you could get the focus on the freshest ingredients, whether that's your tomatoes, your olive oil, your cheese. I mean, that's why I love, you know, Corto olive oil so much. Like their peak freshness is so important to them. And Stanislaw tomatoes, their tomatoes, like they're literally picked off the vine, like hours. I saw it with my own two eyes and brought right to the mill and put in a can, like from the vine to the can in hours. Like, that's the kind of thing. Like, if you could take farmers market ingredients and put that on a pizza, or, you know, you're a chef, right? You know, the best, freshest food is going to give you the best, you know, meal at the end of the day.
You are 100% correct. And Cordo, I had David on the show and we talked about olive oil and what goes into it. And I previously had been using Cordo. And it's like, when you taste that, you can 100% tell that it's different.
Well, that's the thing that struck me about Cordo, because actually, like, I am on Instagram. You could consider me, an influencer, but I never, ever will put something on my page that I don't genuinely like, because one time, for example, I made bread with a flour that I was just gifted, and I actually didn't really like the flour that much. Like, I mean, I didn't hate it, but I just decided to just show it and said, I happen to use this company's flour. And then I got like three, you know, texts later, like, I ordered that flour. And I was like, wait, I didn't tell you to order that flour. So I just realized I have a responsibility. At least I feel like I have a responsibility that if I show something on my page, I have to like it. I have to genuinely enjoy it. And I guess I just, that's important to me. Like, I don't want to be associated with something that I don't like.
That's great, because that's integrity, and I don't think we see enough of that kind of in this media space. So I guess that's a great transition. And how did you start with that, like the Instagram and making pizza all the time and building kind of a page around, you know, pizzas and breads?
Well, like I said, I mean, pizza's always been a part of my life, and, you know, that just kept going on, you know, in my life. But then COVID happened, right? I think everybody has that like COVID story. So pizza, I guess, and Instagram is my COVID story. I got a pizza oven right around the time of the lockdown. And it happened to be an Uni pizza oven, the Uni Coda 16. And I absolutely love the thing. And here I am, I'm bored, you know, home. And I start taking pictures, you know, of my food. I wasn't on social media at all. Like, that was not my thing. And I started sharing the pictures of the pizzas I made. And I couldn't believe the interest. Like, people were asking me, how'd you do that? What'd you do? And I just started getting follower after follower. And then I discovered there's an entire pizza community on Instagram. And now I consider these people my friends and family. Like, I have friends and family all over the world thanks to the pizza community on Instagram. So it just took on a life of its own. And I mean, if you have any interest in pizza and good people, like, I have to recommend joining the pizza community in Instagram. And I like to think of myself almost as, like, you know, a facilitator, someone that will introduce people to that pizza community. So, like, if you don't know anybody, you know, and you want to become a part of it, like, just message me. I'm at Real Clever Food on Instagram, and I'll be happy to introduce you.
Yeah, I've heard this from a number of people. I'm friends with Idriff of What's Good Dough podcast. So, you know, he's talked a lot about how inclusive and welcoming the community is. And so I've gotten to know about a lot of pizza people through him. And I know you're on his podcast, I think like a year or so, maybe 2 years ago.
He's my pizza family. Yes, I consider him not just a friend, a family member. I actually hung out with him quite a bit at Pizza Expo last year in Las Vegas. Just such an amazing person. So yeah, I not only consider him a friend, I would consider him family.
And you've got Women's Pizza Month. What's Women's Pizza Month?
Women's Pizza Month is basically about celebrating women's contributions to pizza, which unfortunately have been largely overlooked. It's a global pizza party on Instagram. And what I do is I dedicate pizzas. Actually, I encourage everybody to dedicate pizzas on Instagram, tag Women's Pizza Month. And what I'll do is, like, for example, this year I teamed up with Cordo and Stanislaw, and they have a brand new pizza kit. And for that pizza kit, there's actually a recipe book where I create a recipe, which happens to also be a dedication to Sarah Minnick, who's one of my pizza heroes. If you're not familiar with Sarah Minnick, she's an amazing, amazing pizza maker. Actually, she also makes ice cream too at a Lovely's 50/50. She actually originally started out as an artist, and her pizza is literally art. So if you buy the pizza kit, you'll see that I have a recipe. I called it the Feta Empower Her Pizza, and it's a marinated feta pizza on with sauteed spinach. So good. But so I get excited about the pizza and the pizza maker. And what I do is I'll take that dedication, and I'll also, you know, highlight Sarah Minnick, introduce you to Sarah if you don't know her, and basically spotlight her as an amazing pizza maker in the world. And I'd love to introduce her, celebrate her, and that's what Women's Pizza Month's about, introducing amazing people like Sarah to the world.
When did you start this?
I started this in March 2021, so this will be the fourth year of Women's Pizza Month, and it keeps getting bigger and better, and I like to call it the world's biggest pizza party to celebrate women. It also happens to be the entire month of March, from March 1st to March 31st. That's right, 31 days of pizza partying fun to celebrate women.
And I'm sure every day you're discovering new women in pizza through the online community and the hashtag and everything. It's, amplifying them, I think, is a great thing, right? Because I still don't know of many pizza makers, female pizza makers, off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's also why I created Women's Pizza Month. Was the thing is, when you would talk to even people in the pizza community who are, I guess you'd call them pizza nerds, who seem to know everybody, and happen to also know some women pizza makers. But if you ask them real quick, you know, to name a few, always the men's names would come up on the top of their head, and you'd hear like people being called the OG. And oftentimes, you know, they'd be like, I love Tony Gemiani, he's great. But like, for me to hear his name being called like the OG of pizza, it's a little bit funny, you know, because for me, I'll think of, and Nancy Silverton is not exactly, you know, super historic when it comes to pizza, but she's been making amazing pizza before Tony had his first restaurant. I mean, Pizza Mozza was like, mind-blowing. I think she opened that, I don't know, in like 2007. And she redefined pizza. I'd call her a pizza pioneer. So if I'm going to shout out my OG for pizza, it's going to be Nancy.
I always think of her with bread, like going back to La Brea Bakery, like way back in the day, you know, in 2000, I was buying her bread for the restaurant I was working at.
Absolutely. I mean, she was a pioneer in bread too, obviously. I mean, we're talking pizza, but yeah, her bringing flavorful bread to the masses, like that was all her. Like, she's done a lot of incredible things. And she's been opening, I think, her Pizza Mozzas all over the world. She recently opened one, I think, last year or 2 years ago in Singapore. I mean, how cool is that?
Well, like you said, everyone loves pizza. I mean, I don't know any culture where people wouldn't want to be eating pizza. Going back to these kits, what are these? So are these are kits I'm assuming people can buy online, these kits with the cordo oil and the tomatoes?
Yeah, these kits are basically to help people celebrate Women's Pizza Month. It's about making Women's Pizza Month bigger, better, and more exciting. Like, I love that Cordo and Stanislaw Tomatoes have, you know, teamed up with me to celebrate women. Like, I know small businesses and helping women have been super important to them. So if that, this collaboration with them has been exciting. And what it is this pizza kit's going to allow home pizza makers access to professional quality ingredients at home. The kit's going to have their signature Truly olive oil, which we were talking about, has that. It's picked, the olives are picked at their peak of freshness. And the olive oil, literally, it's so vegetal. It's so herbaceous. Like, you get all those green flavors. A phenomenal olive oil, like my favorite from the United States. You're going to get that in the kit. They have their Datarini baby plum tomatoes in the kit, and those have never been available to the public before. The olive oil you could get on their website, but the tomatoes are super special. I've fallen in love with them. You could literally eat them out of the jar, like most flavorful tomatoes I've ever had. And then the kit also comes with an oregano mill, which is new to me.
I've never seen an oregano mill before.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to be freshly grinding our dried oregano? I mean, I in my hand will sometimes put some and kind of, you know, rub it, but I've never seen a grinder on an oregano before.
I love kitchen toys, so for me it was like, cool, I need this because I don't have one. So that's fun. And then the recipe book, not only do I have a recipe in there, where we have a world pizza multi award-winning pizza champion Laura Meyer, who has her restaurant Pizzeria Laura in Berkeley, California. She contributes a recipe. Audrey Kelly, who owns Audrey Jane's Garage in Boulder, Colorado, has a recipe in there. You'll find not only their pizza recipe, like their toppings, but their dough recipe, and mine too. Like, if you want to make my exact dough, that recipe is in the booklet. We also have Louise Joseph. She's a pizza maker out of Greenwich, Connecticut. So super exciting stuff.
Do you keep it traditional? Do you, like, preference? I know you've done a little everything, but like, if you were to make pizza, do you lean more towards the traditional side? Or are you more experimental? And maybe not with like dough and stuff, but like toppings. Like, are you just pepperoni? Or are you putting like wild, crazy things on top?
All of the above and more.
Try it all.
Yeah, try it all. I mean, that's the thing is, like, I love to change. When you go crazy experimental, it actually is nice to go back to the classics and appreciate, you know, a basic margarita or a marinara pizza. And that's why, you know, good ingredients are so important. Like, you have to have amazing tomatoes, amazing mozzarella, olive oil, if you're going to make a very basic pizza. I think that's where we're seeing that big shift in the U.S. We went from pizza looked at as like a commodity, you know, that you'd see at like a fast food place or something you just grab real quick and, you know, it's tomato sauce and cheese, good enough. To now where, you know, it's elevated to like the highest cuisine. Like, pizza has reached all kinds of levels. I mean, if you go into New York City, you could easily spend $30 on a 12-inch pizza now.
100%. And, you know, it's kind of like you see the same with tacos before, where it was just like commodity shells. Now you have products. I've talked a lot about like Macienda, and people are making good fresh tortillas, and they're getting, you know, heritage Berkshire pig to chop down for their meat. But it's hard to break people out of the mindset of like a $3 taco. And I see the same with the pizzas, as you're getting into a $17, $20 pizza coming off of a pizza truck or out of a pizzeria that, you know, essentially feeds one person, and getting people to kind of not necessarily associate it with the cheap pizza that maybe we grew up with.
Yeah, quality over quantity, you know. And that's the thing is, even when pizza gets, I guess, expensive, it's still affordable. And that's my favorite thing. It's like, pizza is that food that's accessible for all. And whether, you know, and that's the whole thing with Women's Pizza Month too, is, you know, it's also, I like to demonstrate, whether you're a man or a woman, you know, the whole pizza party is about having fun. It's about inviting everyone. It's to show people that, you know, pizza is for everyone, and pizza should be made by everyone.
Well, in relating to that price point, you know, you go to a fancy restaurant now, and all the starters, you get like a hamachi crudo, and you get what's 2 ounces maybe of raw fish and some kind of broth or something, and that's $20. And you're not even close to being filled, and you're going to be spending $100 on all these little plates. I mean, I don't know why we haven't really put a spotlight on that, but then we look at things like pizza and think that it's too expensive. But I guess, again, history comes into play there. And as long as you can get $2 slices at some slice shop somewhere, then, you know, it's hard to kind of break out of that, I guess.
Yeah, I think in New York City, they track the pizza prices against the subway prices. You know, it's just funny. And then there's always that dollar slice place that still exists. But like, people ask me about that, and I'm like, no, I will not make a recommendation for a dollar slice. In my opinion, there is no good dollar slice.
But even this might be controversial, even bad pizza is like good pizza. You know, like, there is some truly bad. My one thing is the dough at least has to be cooked. My kids, there's like a indoor play place here that people have birthday parties at, and they have pizza, and I guess they cook it there, and the dough is always raw. Like, even if it's like crappy pizza, just cook the dough, because when I bite in, if there's raw dough, I'm done. But, you know, I do have high standards for pizza, don't get me wrong, but every once in a while, like the cheap slice, you know, it'll fill the stomach.
Okay. I mean, I don't agree with there's no such thing as bad pizza, but I think compared to other food, you can get away with pizza more than, I mean, you're not going to get usually sick, you know, from a bad
There's definitely bad pizza. But, you know, like, if you go to a place and they have a pizza out, it's like, I'm happy that there's pizza. It's better than many of the options you could have.
And that's the thing, though, is pizza's personal. Like, and I love that about pizza. Like, one topping that I might hate might be your favorite. I mean, pineapple is no longer controversial, but at one point, obviously, it was. But now, like, it's like, do you put fish on pizza? Do you, you know, like, I feel like, and it's funny, I feel like anchovies are way more controversial than pineapple. That's why I always laugh about pineapple.
Do you have any fun collaborations or any upcoming things you're doing besides the Women's Pizza Month?
Well, I'm always doing collaborations. I actually, a host, or I guess a lead person with Pizza Club. We talk about pizza. I'm an Uni ambassador. So on Instagram, we're always doing collaborations with different brands, different people. I'm always looking for more collaborations, but even for Women's Pizza Month, actually, there's something we forgot to talk about too, or we still need to talk about, is Cordo and Stanislaw Tomatoes are sponsoring a scholarship for aspiring pizza makers to celebrate Women's Pizza Month. So that's actually another collaboration that I'm excited about for Women's Pizza Month.
What's the scholarship do if you win?
Well, five pizza women are going to be eligible to win. There should be aspiring pizza makers, women pizza makers, who want to get into the pizza industry. They're going to get a multi-day intensive class at Pizza University in Maryland, and it's going to teach them how to open a business, a successful pizza business, how to make pizza, anything they basically need to know to get started in the pizza industry. So I'm super, super excited about that.
I'm in Maryland, so I'm like 40 minutes outside of Baltimore. That sounds really cool. I didn't know anything about Pizza University here.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's been pretty new to me, but I keep seeing all these amazing pizza makers doing classes there that I'm like, oh, I want to go to that.
I think that's great. I was talking to someone else about, you know, I get a lot of questions about, should you go to culinary school? And I'm not going to go off on this side tangent, but what I say is, like, once you figure out if you're going to be in food and what you want to do, start looking at things like that, like classes, instead of going and spending $50,000, $100,000 on this very general thing. Like, if you know that you're really interested in pizza, don't go to culinary school. Find something like that. I think there's so many great classes. You know, I took a charcuterie class one day. You know, it was like a 3-day class, a very intensive on butchering and making charcuterie. That's something that would be incorporated into a traditional culinary school, but it's much more affordable, accessible to go and do something like that with some of the experts in the field. And I'm always recommending, you know, just seeking out a kind of niche topic or something like that if you know what you want to do.
Absolutely. You know, and make sure that you like it. And it's funny how many chefs, you know, who have started out with fancy restaurants who have now gone into burgers or pizza, you know, for lots of reasons. But I do like to think that pizza is just more fun.
And it's food that it's comfort food. It's really something I think most of us grew up with. It's something that can be fun. You can adapt it a number of ways. Reasonably priced, reasonably easy to start making at home. And I think it's accessible to everyone. So yeah, pizza is the great unifier. When people say, like, what's your favorite food? How many people do you think say pizza? You know, kind of just a knee-jerk response, like, oh, pizza, of course, that's my favorite food. I'm sure it's a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, if someone tells me they don't like pizza, like, my first reaction is like, that's impossible. I mean, when I say there's literally a pizza for everyone, they're absolutely is. I mean, maybe someone's definition of pizza might not, you know, and that's a whole thing. Like, I actually was on a show where we talked about the definition of pizza. And I mean, the semantics that could go on with that are actually crazy and pretty entertaining. But, you know, if you don't have a rigid view on pizza, like, literally, there has to be a pizza for everyone.
Along the lines of, is a hot dog a sandwich? And that gets into very muddy waters.
Let's go even more controversial. Is Chicago deep dish a pizza?
Ooh, yes, I know.
I'm going to get a lot of shade for that. I do think it's a pizza.
I feel like it's waning, though. Like, you don't see that on a national level. Like, I feel like that was innovative and different in the 80s, right? When we only grew up with one style of pizza and it was not Chicago deep dish. You know, you had like Uno's or whatever. And I think that's maybe the first and last time I had it. It's not something I see. I mean, is there a lot of Chicago pizza outside of Chicago? I don't know.
Well, what's funny is, and actually what's interesting, with Pizza Club, I met some crazy pizza nerds. Like, I thought I was a pizza nerd, and, you know, I mean, there are much nerdier people than me. There's a guy named, he's an author, a pizza historian, can we call him? His name's Peter Regas, and he basically dives deep into the history of pizza. And he talked about how actually Chicago deep dish originated, believe it or not, from a woman from the South who started out making dough from like her idea of biscuits. So I think that might be, according to him, like, that origination of what Chicago pizza is was actually the reason it's so heavy, I guess you'd call heavy, is because the person who brought it to Chicago was thinking biscuits.
It definitely has that biscuit, like almost like crumbly consistency of a biscuit. So I can see that. I had never heard that, but that makes sense. I'll maybe have to spend some time and do my own like side deep dive into that. I grew up exclusively with Greek pizza. I grew up in Massachusetts, and I didn't know, I had never had any pizza other than that until like I went away to college. Like we always had, you know, it was in a pan. It was a little greasier. The crust was a little crackly. The sauce was a little sweeter. That's all I knew. We had all these Greek house of pizzas in our town, and there was like three or four of them. And literally until the time I was like 18 years old, for the most part, besides like school pizza, I think that was the only pizza I had.
Isn't it amazing? Like, you know, everybody is like, I mean, like I said, New York, we're spoiled. We have so many types of pizza. And I guess people in Chicago, you know, their types would be either a deep dish, or my favorite actually is the tavern thin crust. It's amazing how many types of pizza are out there. You got Detroit pizza, which has been super phenomenally, like super popular lately. Detroit pizza, if you're not familiar, it looks like a thick Sicilian pizza, but it has what we call a cheese frico around the edge. You have crispy cheese all around the edges. I mean, it's a heavier pizza, but it's a fun, fun pizza. You have St. Louis style Greek pizza, grandma pizza. I mean, even the whole phenomenon now is pizza sandwiches, you know, which people call piadinos, and, you know, it goes on and on.
Well, I was talking to someone the other day about this. We have near me Rad Pies, and they won at the pizza expo 2 years ago, I think, the best pan pizza in the world. They have their Detroit won first place, and they have like their Detroit with the frico, but they also do, they call it a pepperoni crown. So not only is it the cheese, but pepperoni lines the side. And then when you take it out, like they're sticking up and it looks like you have a crown, and they took first place at the Pizza Expo 2 years ago. And that's their one, like no modifications. Like you can mod almost all the pizzas, but you can't mod that. It's like it comes as is because they want everyone to try that pizza. So I'm fortunate we have some good pizza places around here, even in Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. Is I feel like with Detroit pizza, people have gone really crazy. When I was talking about Pizza Club, I have a co-host, his name's Jimmy Hank. He's Jimmy Hank Pizza on Instagram, and he does some crazy things with pizza and frico. He's put French fries in the frico. I mean, you can get really wild and crazy with pizza.
I've never seen that before. I've never seen French fries in or on a pizza before.
Oh, I mean, oh, that's funny. Is actually that a lot of Italians get all, you know, crazy about, you know, authenticity and putting, you don't put pineapple, you don't put that on pizza. But actually, a pretty basic traditional pizza you'll find all over Italy, it has hot dogs and French fries on it. They say it's for the kids, what? But I'm not buying it.
I've never seen that before.
Oh, hot dogs and French fries. All over Italy, you'll find it. Yeah.
Wow. I learned at least one new thing today. I'll have to look into hot dog French fry pizza. I hope we have a really great Women's Pizza Month. I look forward to sharing. I'll be sharing throughout the month with people as well, not just when your episode comes out. So we'll try and get some more excitement around this.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, if people want to sign up for that scholarship or buy the pizza kit, it'd be cordo-olive.com. And like you said, you know, come join the party. I'd love you to make a pizza dedicated to a woman who inspires you, because that's what Women's Pizza Month's about. Tag me and hashtag Women's Pizza Month, and we'll celebrate that woman who inspired you, whether it's a pizza maker, a family member, a celebrity, whoever it is, someone that inspires you, a woman who inspires you. We'll celebrate that woman, and we'll also celebrate you as the pizza maker. So whether you're a woman, a man, or whatever, we're going to celebrate you as a pizza maker too.
I love it. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. I had fun.
And to all of our listeners, as always, this has been Chris with Chefs Without Restaurants. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week. You're still here? The podcast's over. If you are indeed still here, thanks for taking the time to listen to the show. I'd love to direct you to one place, and that's chefswithoutrestaurants.org. From there, you'll be able to join our email newsletter, get connected in our free Facebook group, and join our personal chef, catering, and food truck database so I can help get you more job leads. And you'll also find a link to our sponsor page where you'll find products and services I love.
You pay nothing additional to use these links, but I may get a small commission, which helps keep the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast and organization running. You might even get a discount for using some of these links. As always, you can reach out to me on Instagram at Chefs Without Restaurants or send me an email at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much.
Over the past 30 years, the world of the personal chef has grown in importance to fulfill dining needs. While the pandemic certainly upended the restaurant experience, it allowed personal chefs to close that dining gap. Central to all of that is the United States Personal Chef Association. Representing nearly 1,000 chefs around the U.S. and Canada, USPCA provides a strategic backbone for those chefs, including liability insurance, training, communications, certification, and more. It's a reassurance to consumers that the chef coming into their home is prepared to offer them an experience with their meal. USPCA provides training to become a personal chef through our preparatory membership. Looking to showcase your products or services to our chefs and their clients? Partnership opportunities are available. And there's a new member special on all membership levels. Save $25 to $75 by using promo code SPRING2024. Special veteran pricing and payment plans are available. Call Angela today at 1-800-995-2138, extension 705, or email her at aprather@uspca.com for membership and partner info.